Oi, oi, and welcome to a very special edition of the Orient Outlook podcast. As part of our 50th episode celebrations, we are trying to bring as many great interviews with the best Orient players that we've ever had. And we are delighted this evening that joining us by phone is the one and only Moses Odubadjo. Welcome to the show, Moses.
Evening, all.
So, a quick brief recap of Moses' time at Orient. Moses appeared for the youth team during the 2010 season. Got his first call up to the senior squad for a League One match versus Notts County back in September 2010 as an unused sub. He made his professional debut for the O's in a Football League Trophy first round East London derby against Dagenham and Redbridge on the 7th of September 2011 and scored a penalty in that massive penalty shootout which ended 14-13 to them. Mo made his league debut as a 77th minute sub in a 3-1 defeat at home to Oldham on 17th of September and made his first start for the club in the final game of the season at home to Rochdale. And in that match, Mo, if you remember, I'm sure you do, scored a great goal from 25 yards in a 2-1 victory, and that goal got goal of the season, so well done, but we'll come back to that later.
Yeah, absolutely.
In 2012-2013, Mo was used mainly as a right back, making regular sub appearances and sporadic starts, but then he finally broke through to the team, used as a right winger, finishing the season with 54 appearances and 3 goals as we finished just outside the playoff places. And in the 2013-14 season, no introduction needed to that, Mo played a vital role in Orient's rise to the top of the league. We won our opening 8 games. Mo's exploits saw him win the Football League Young Player of the Month award in April, and Mo scored 4 goals during the second half of the season as we finished in 3rd place, getting in the playoffs. In the playoffs, obviously, we faced Peterborough. Mo got the goal in the away leg, which was an amazing day out, an amazing feeling when Mo scored being in there in that stand. And then we beat them at home 2-1 and got to the final against Rotherham United. And obviously in the final, as everyone remembers, Mo scored the opening goal that we'll speak about later as well, which was an incredible goal and the emotion running for everyone when that went in.
Sound about right to you, Mo?
Yep. Sounds perfect.
Yeah, and in that season, Mo made 57 appearances and scored 12 goals before a summer move to Brentford.
Yeah.
Well, so crack
absolutely
on.
Yeah, so starting off from the beginning, I guess, Moses, what age did you sort of get into football then?
I'd probably say I got into it from about 10 onwards.
Okay.
I used to go, basically go and watch my older brother train with his Sunday league team, so I'd just be there on the sideline, like, even if it was hot, cold, whatever the weather was, I'd always love to go and watch. And occasionally I'd join in, which was good. Like, he said, do I fancy a game? And I'd join in. And then when I got a bit older, he asked the age group that I was in if I could go and train with them, you know. So basically I trained with them for a little while, and he was interested. So, and that team there at the time was called Elms FC, and that was my local team, and I grew up playing with them.
Amazing. And were you always on the right hand side of the pitch, or did you start like in the middle, or did you start as a striker? Where did you start?
Funny enough, I started centre back.
Okay, how come?
I don't know. I just think at the time the manager thought he saw something in me which I didn't see, you know. And at that age, I was really quick, so anything that went over the top, I could just kind of deal with it. And I was quicker than most of the strikers in that Sunday league division at a young age. So I helped the team a lot. And I had a physical strength at that age. So I helped a lot.
I have to say that skill and attribute that you have there for being so quick was often, or was probably the main reason why you were the last man back under Russell Slade. On corners and free kicks in their half. And I always used to love it when a player, when they used to break and counter from one of our corners, say, and they used to try and knock it round you, and I thought, all right, thanks very much for giving us the ball back, because I was like, you're never going to beat Moses. You're never, ever going to knock the ball round him and run faster than him and get it. And that's one of the most redeeming features that I just remember, is just that we would never be counted with Moses as last man back.
And that is into our next question, really. So were you always naturally fast, or was it something that you've had to kind of work on, or was it just an ability you've always had from a young age?
Well, I'd probably say it was just ability that I've always had, you know. And I think over the years, as my muscles have developed, obviously, you know, it's helped me a lot, and I feel like I've got quicker, and I feel like I'm getting stronger and stronger.
Cool. So who did you support as a kid? What football team did you support?
In my household, I think everyone apart from my oldest brother supported Liverpool, so I kind of just went along with the flow.
Okay.
And started supporting Liverpool. And Michael Owen was around, and he was at Liverpool that when I was that age, you know. So I used to look up to him a lot. So Liverpool is.
Okay, and who was there? Any other players that you used to look up to as well?
As I got a bit older, you know, and I started to understand the game a bit more. When I used to watch Barcelona play, when Ronaldinho was there,
oh, wow.
I used to just admire watching him play in his prime, you know, and probably him and Figo, probably the people I used to look up to the most.
Wow,
so
some great players to be looking up to.
Absolutely.
To be fair.
So from centre back, and how did you find your way to kind of right back and right wing on the right hand side? Was it a coach at a youth level who took you aside and said, "Look, Mo, I think you'd be good on this side," or was it just a natural kind of progression?
Yeah, it was a bit of both, to be fair, because throughout the Sunday teams I used to play for, my brother managed one, funny enough, and he just said to me, "Look, I'm gonna play you on the wing because I know you're good enough to play here." And I played in the wing for a couple of games, and then after that, he just said to me, "You know, like that's what I was saying. You know, you're better playing the wing." And I scored a couple of goals, which helped the team obviously at the time. And I never looked back since from there.
Absolutely. So then, kind of, how did you end up signing for Orient? Obviously, you and your brother's kind of team. And how did you go from there to?
Because you live in Kent. You're from that part of the world, aren't you?
Yeah.
So how did you come on the Orient radar?
I went on trial at Millwall, I think, when I was at under 16s, because the Millwall coach used to do a bit of coaching for our Sunday league team. So he'd do a little bit of scouting as well on the side. And he obviously said, "Look, come down because I think you're good enough." So I went on trial at Millwall, but unfortunately I didn't get in because I couldn't really get the days off of school to go and train with the youth team, because when you're under 16, you do like a thing called day release.
Right.
Where I think it's one day a week, you go and train with the youth team and see how, like, what you're going to be doing when you leave school, if you do get a scholarship. So unfortunately, I wasn't able to get one with Millwall, but the under 16 manager knew Wayne Burnett at the time. He was at Orient. And he just recommended me to go down there, and I did the trial period with Warren, as you guys know, and the Oyster card situation happened as well. And after that, he left, and Andy Edwards, who's the current youth team manager, he joined, and I rang him up, and he was happy for me to come back down and have a trial again.
Lucky he did. Lucky for us.
For us, absolutely.
Yeah, and then he and the gaffer thought about it hardly, you know, after the situation, and then they said yes, which I was very, very delighted with, and I kicked on in the right way.
Absolutely. So when you arrived at Orient, kind of, what were your first impressions of the club? Was it what you expected it to be, or was it better, or some aspects a bit worse?
I think I was probably more like starstruck as anything, because, you know, like I was in and around big, like, League One players, you know, and at that age, I thought that this is something that I actually want to do, you know, so I felt like my expectations were met on obviously the first day being there.
And who kind of took you under their wing? I guess at that point, you got good experienced players like Liz Beard there, and, you know, to kind of help you out, and was it the more experienced players who kind of helped you out, or did you form this?
Yeah, when I was there, when I was a youth team, I think the ones that helped me a lot was probably Charlie Daniels, who's at Bournemouth now. Terrell Forbes, who I think is playing non-league at the moment. And the likes of Scott McLeish as well. When they saw me in and around the building, they'd make jokes, and, you know, they'd always say something. Or if I went over to train with them, they'd always be giving me confidence, you know, and telling me that I can do things. And obviously I left out Dean Cox as well. He played a big part when I was coming through the ranks. So it was good.
Yeah, some big names there. And we've interviewed Scott McLeish, and he's quite a character. He's a
funny guy, actually. Yeah, really nice guy. So from that point of view, coming through, how difficult was it as a younger player trying to get your way into the first team? We hear you say that, you know, they were very encouraging the first team players, but obviously they don't decide who plays on a Saturday afternoon. So how was it in terms of trying to convince the manager that you were ready and good enough to be in that first team?
I think as any young player coming through, it's very, very tough, you know, to get the trust of your manager that you need, especially your manager like Russell said. I just think every day that I went in, I knew I had to train well to give my chance, to give myself a chance of at least making the 19-man squad, which was very tough because I was still very young there, you know, and there was a lot of experienced players who I'm training with, you know, and it's hard to stick out. But I think once I got to a certain period in the season where I just thought, you know, I've got nothing to lose here, you know, and the players have my back in, and they can see something in me. If they wasn't pushing on so much, you know, I don't think I'd be able to do it, but it shows that they believed in me, you know, and the manager helped me a lot as well, like in training, like us training. He'd be taking me through like situations, scenarios which can happen in the game. And I'd be practicing my free kicks or whatever it was. I'd be practicing crossing the ball. I'd do about 20 balls a day just to try and better myself and give me that extra yard which I need. And in the end, it all paid off, you know, and I gained his trust, shall I say, and I was brought on against Dagenham in the cup, and I'm very thankful for that.
But Russell Slade strikes me as a type of manager, as once he kind of believes in you and trusts you, that's it, you've always got his trust, and he'll always stick by. He seems to be a loyal manager to me. That's the way he comes across anyway, I guess, to a certain element of the fans.
Yeah, I think he's a very loyal manager, you know. Like, I think once you gain his trust, you just have to do your best to keep it that way, because I think if you've always got that, then you're always going to be on the team sheet, you know, or you're always going to be coming on as a sub, which is good. And he's the type of manager, you know, he breathes confidence into his players and they play off good confidence.
He's very good at getting the spirit up, isn't he? Getting the spirit up and getting the players to buy into his ideas. That's one thing that definitely struck me when he first arrived. He wasn't going for big names, he was going for good characters and reliable, dependent characters.
Yeah, I think he's good at what he does. Like, you know, before games and whatnot, he knows the right things to say for us to go out roaring. You know, in that season where we went into the playoffs, I think there wasn't one game where I wasn't going out thinking, oh, I'm feeling a bit tired today, or something's on my mind. I'd always be going out thinking, you know what, we're going to go and win, or we're going to start really fast, and it paid off.
I think that's one of the things that has come from Russell Slade's sort of tenure as our manager, is that he's a great man manager, and he always bred confidence amongst the players that they are good enough if they're in his team, and that they can go out and do anything they want to do and be as good as they can be. And he'll always squeeze that extra percent out of players because they will put themselves, you know, they put their bodies on the line for each other. You know, you're a team, you're a unit, you know, you're 11 individuals playing together rather than 11 individuals playing for 11 individuals. So it's nice to hear that, because that's what we got from him. You know, he's a player's manager, you know.
Absolutely.
So it's good to hear that repeated from someone within the camp as well. What Moses, just moving on slightly now, what do you remember about your debut? What can you recall of that?
My full debut, probably the goal speaks for itself, but I think like just the adrenaline of seeing my name on the starting lineup, you know, and walking out, and just the day itself was just incredible. Like, this is actually happening, I'm actually starting, you know, after 2 years of sitting on the side being a ball boy and cleaning up after the first team players. I'm actually walking out with them, playing with them. So it was a great experience, and adrenaline was rushing through my body the whole way through.
Did you find out a couple of days before, or did Slade kind of sit you down like an hour or two before? Was it something that you were told about and you kind of had time to prepare, or was it kind of, were you just thrust into it?
Well, to be honest, I didn't really know that, because he told some of the loan players that they can go back because he's going to play like some of the youth for the last couple of games, but I wasn't too sure if like we were just going to come on, you know, for a little appearance. But then when I got there on the day of the game and I saw my name, I was shocked. And then I just had to take it all in, and everyone came over to give their little bit of stay cool, you know, and play the game, which was good and helped me a lot. So I was really shocked.
So tell us about your goal against Rochdale. For those that may not remember, what can you recall that for us and recount that from your perspective?
Funny enough, I can't actually remember that much of that. I just remember picking the ball up from just past the halfway line, I think. I'm not too sure, but I picked the ball up and I started to drive with it, and Jamal Campbell-Rice has made a run on the outside of me, and he's dragged, I think, two players away with him, and I've just seen a big space open up, and I've darted into the space. And I think the defender's come towards me, and just instinctively I've just shifted it onto my left foot, and then I've hit it, and not knowing how far out I was, I just hit the ball, and the next thing I could just hear the fans just screaming and celebrating, and I didn't even know how to celebrate, and before I knew it I was near the byline getting tugged down by four of the lads.
Yeah, we're just watching it on YouTube now. We've got a PC open. I think
You got bundled,
yeah. What a goal.
You got massively bundled.
That's proper, like, Roy the Rovers stuff, like that run. Great finish, great goal. Yeah. Great goal.
Must really be good.
Be like a dream. So, obviously, season after is kind of when you start making your name in the 2012-13 season. And in that season, you won the club's Young Player of the Year award. And we just finished outside of the playoffs in that season. What do you remember about that? You know, you kind of... How was that season for you?
I think that season for me was just trying to think what I can
implement. If I remember rightly, just to help you out there, if I remember rightly, that season we although we finished seventh, it's not like we were in the playoffs. I think we had a late surge to seventh. I think we were around 12th or 10th. Yeah, right, yeah. And I think we had a late surge to seventh, and I think we were about 4 points off of, or 3 points off the last playoffs place. But it's not like we had like an outstanding season and just missed out. I think we had a late surge.
I think the foundations were being set, weren't they, for the following season?
Yeah.
I think what I remember, I think that season was just more for me cementing my name in the Football League, you know, and going to like the tough places at the time, like MK Dons, and playing well. Like, as a young player, it was all about consistency, and it still obviously is about consistency. So I think it was just showing everyone that, you know, I'm actually good enough to play at this level, and that goal against Rochdale wasn't just a fluke, or that performance wasn't a fluke. So I think that year for me was just saying, look, I can play at this level, you know, and I've got way more to show everyone and the fans.
Yeah,
and it must be pretty special to win the Young Player of the Year award as well in that season.
So soon after starting getting into the team, really.
Yeah, no, I was very happy to win that award. It's always a big award to win, and when I collected that shield and I saw some of the young names on that shield, and I felt honoured, you know, that my name was obviously going to be marked on that shield as well, which is always good. And I just felt that was obviously a taste of what's to come if I can keep progressing, you know. And I hoped at the time that the season after that would be even better, and there'll be even more good news to come, and which there was. Yeah. So I was grateful.
That leads nicely onto our next question, really. Yeah. So, you know, the 2013-14 season is definitely the best season that I can remember. Well, best season of my lifetime, I would say. Well, in our lifetimes as well.
Yeah, far in the 2005-06 when we got promoted, it's of most recent time, it absolutely is. And it, as you said earlier, Steve, it is really cemented by that late surge up to seventh. It kind of sort of set the groundwork for 2014. 13-14 season. So as a player coming back in for pre-season, what were expectations? What were sort of the opening sort of chats that Russell was having with the squad? Was it to really gun for promotion?
No, I don't think we was at the beginning we was gunning for promotion. I just think it was key for us to have a good start to the season, you know, and then going to every game feeling like, you know, we can actually win and we can actually push for something. And after the first, I think it was the 8 games where we didn't lose, or whatever it was.
We was actually serious
title contenders, you know, and everyone was actually scared of us. And it worked. And that confidence breathed out throughout the squad, and it helped a lot.
Any particularly memorable moments from those initial eight games? Because as fans, we couldn't quite believe that we'd won so many on the bounce. Because historically, Russell doesn't start the seasons off very well. His teams don't actually start to get going until November, December time. But here we are, beginning of the season, and we've won eight games.
I remember the first home game, Mo. We had Shrewsbury, and we went two up. Mooney got both, and in the last minute, you went on this run and just took out about four of their players and just slotted it past their keeper, and we won 3-0. A great goal, and I remember like thinking, oh, actually, like, we're a pretty decent team here.
Yeah, I think that game probably stood out for me, you know, because it sent messages to all of the other teams in the league to say that, look, we can actually beat teams more than one goal and two goals, you know, and obviously it's always good to get on the score sheet and to score like that, you know, so that probably that stood out for me. And probably the team performance as well that day just showed that after one goal, we don't just sit back, you know, as teams do and just defend us. We pushed on and we got the second, and then to kill him off even more, we got the third. So it just showed the team spirit.
And there were some other great games within the opening eight games, like Brentford away, where you absolutely pummeled their left back all night, which was live on Sky, which was brilliant.
Yeah.
And also the Port Vale game, where it was 2-0 and Lisby scored in the last minute. And when we interviewed Kev, he said scoring that third goal, I think he said that was
one of the
I think he said that was the actual highlight of his Orient career, apart from Wembley. Just like the feeling in the stadium when he scored it, and just the feeling of that ball hitting the net.
Oh yeah! Also, that Brentford game, that feeling when the finals went, because obviously it was a London derby, and it just meant so much for the fans that you could see the passion in them as you went over to Clapham.
Yeah.
I think that game that was probably the best atmosphere for the first eight games. That was the best atmosphere going for sure.
I think we packed out the Brentford away.
Yeah, we did.
We absolutely packed it out, if I remember rightly.
But I guess on a personal note for yourself, you know, you bagged a brace away to Swindon, which was like your first double. I remember we beat Colchester at home 2-1, and we scored our second with a counter attack, and a great finish by yourself. And you know the morning of Ginningham, which was 5-0 or 5-1, where we were like 4-0 up at half time. On a personal note, I mean, it must have been an amazing team to play in at that point.
Yeah, no, I think by that point we were just we were going into games just on the upper hand, you know, through the manager's team talk to how training was the week before and just how everyone was feeling. Like the likes of David Mooney and Kevin Lisby at that stage, they was on fire, and they had a partnership in the league who no one could get near to, you know. And I think that day was obviously very key to our success in that season as well, you know, and me and Coxie were suppliers at majority of the time to them, you know, and it helps knowing that our striker's going into a game, knowing that he's going to get two or three chances, or maybe four, to have a shot and goal, which is always good.
Yeah, absolutely. And that midfield of, you know, yourself, Dean, Vince Lowe and James were just impeccable that season. You know, it was always, that team sheet was very kind of set in stone, and every time that midfield went out on the pitch, you all seemed to have a great understanding with each other. You know, Vince Lowe kind of sitting at the back, like you said, you and Coxie on the wings and sometimes alternating, and Coxie knew where you were going to be and you knew where Coxie was going to be, and Lisby would know where to go when Cox had the ball. Real pleasure to watch as a football fan.
Yeah, no, I just think a lot of it come naturally after a while, you know, because once you know how your teammates play, you know, you can bob and weave, as they call it nowadays. And if I ended up on Coxie's side, he'd drift over to my side to cover me, you know. And I think we all had an understanding. And what helped massively was off the field, it was all tight knit as well, just as it was on the field. Even the lads that weren't playing, they were still tight knit with us, you know. And it was a small group, wasn't the biggest group. But I think we bonded well. And in a successful team, off the field, you should be able to, you know, be able to hang out and do things, but some places you go, they might not do such certain things off the field, you know, and it shows on the pitch. So
absolutely. When we spoke to Kev, he said his wife used to cook for the lads, and that used to be kind of a real great way of bringing the squad together. So yes, completely understand the point there. So obviously during the season you were putting in some great performances, and I remember you kind of being linked with some big clubs during that season. I mean, how is that distracting for you as a player, or does that motivate you to get your head down more?
I think I got the first sniff of it when before I just signed my 2.5, I think it was a 2-year contract I signed. Before that, I had a couple of sniffs and whatnot, and that was all surreal to me at that stage, because coming from obviously nothing, not much, you know, and knowing that big teams are interested and whatnot, it kind of just said, you know, like, this is actually real now and it's happening. So I thought from then, you know, I think I just felt to myself that if I keep plugging away, if I keep doing well, the interest can grow, you know, and who knows what can happen. So I just thought to myself, let me get my head down and just keep working as hard as I can.
That's quite an amazing attitude, because a lot of players, I think, that hear this suddenly come in with a different swagger when they come into training the next day. It's like, yeah, so, you know, they get their head turned and all of a sudden they think they're better than what they were. So how do you remain so grounded?
I probably say, like, the people around me. I've obviously got my girlfriend here, and my brothers, who obviously have been brought up with me, you know, and they keep me grounded a lot of the time. They used to come and watch me every game, and I just think they help me a lot when they can, you know, just the right words, which is always good to hear, you know. So I think that's probably how I stay the most grounded, just listening to my close people around me.
Yeah, very good, very good. Because as you see, a lot of players don't reach their full potential when a big name club comes in for them and they get their head turned. All of a sudden, they think they're better than what they are.
Absolutely. So that season finished, and we finished in third, which was so annoying because that was a record points tally for us. And in most seasons, we would have gone up automatically.
And for 80% of that season, we were in the top two.
Yeah.
And we just fell out at last knocking. So we move into the playoff period now, Mo. What do you remember about the playoffs? So if we start with the first leg. You scored the equaliser. What do you remember of that game?
That was obviously, that's the first playoff I've ever been involved in, you know, and it was all new to me. So my legs kind of felt like, you know, that they needed a holiday, you know, but we just and all my friends would have been finished, like their season would have been done.
Yeah.
So it was hard to obviously get motivated for, but once I knew the real reason, like, you know, that there's a bigger stake, I just thought we need to start as we do, but going away to Peterborough is never going to be easy. But I just remember it was an open game that I can remember, and they obviously took the lead first, which was not the best ideal start for us.
Yeah, they scored an early goal, didn't they? They got an early goal from a Son Malonga, and he was like a yard off, he was about 2-3 yards offside.
Yeah, he was. Yeah.
Yeah. So we just as a team, we just had the way, you know, and we had. It always helps when you've got great support and great backing to keep pushing us on. And I think we made a couple subs, and the subs made an impact. And I was lucky to get a rebound, I think, from David Mooney's shot or Sean Batt's shot, one of them shot.
Yeah, really.
And I was lucky to get the rebound, you know, to equalise for us. And I just think it helped us, and it set the stone for going into the home leg.
Yeah, that was amazing. I remember being there. I remember when the ball rolled out to you and it was kind of you just by yourself, and it was like, come on, Mo, head down, just tap it. And I remember, like, when it hit the net, the away end just went mental. So got a good one all drawn in that home leg. That was something else. That was one of the best nights, and I think in memory, wasn't it?
Yeah. What do you remember of the second leg? Because obviously all the fans were on the pitch and at the end of it, and
you came up on the balcony.
Players were on the balcony.
I remember seeing a. After the game, I saw a picture of two old couple.
Yes.
Yeah.
Actually, funny enough, my girlfriend, I think she sent me the picture of the old couple on the pitch, you know, and that just showed how long it's been since, you know, this has happened to a club like Orient, you know, and us going on the balcony, and I see the fans, and there was a little kid who had a cardboard writing of me saying Moses walks on water once again.
Oh, wow. I think I remember that.
Unbelievable
thing.
It was a night to remember, and that goes down in history for me.
Yeah, it was quite a tight game, wasn't it, first half? And then Coxie scores the first, and then Dagnall kind of got a late second, and then they pulled one back, and then it was a kind of back to the wall for 5 minutes. But I remember the full-time whistle went, and then this stewards just opened up the gates, and everyone was just like bombed it, and then you guys appeared on the balcony, and yeah, a really special night.
I don't think the stewards have much choice about people going on the pitch.
Absolutely.
Oh, no, everyone's gonna go on the pitch. Yep. The fans just singing, we're going to Wembley, you know, it was a night to remember.
Yeah.
And I guess, you know, with the final, I think the final was like 2.5 weeks after. It was a bit of a wait to the final. How do you prepare for that? Kind of, do you just relax and train, not train as hard because you don't want to get injured? But on the other side, do you train harder?
I think for the first week, we just did light training, I think. And then towards the of the second week commenced, we just took it as a normal week, you know. And we trained normally, and then we stayed in a nice hotel. And I was really relaxed going into that playoff game. Funny enough, you know, I just thought I've got nothing to lose here, you know. It's my first time being here, and obviously it's big for the club, but as players we have to play the, you know, the game, not the occasion.
Yeah.
And then we tried, and at the last hurdle we slipped, you know, which is unfortunate.
When you got to Wembley and you walk out on the pitch before the fans get there, how does that feel? Is it just kind of astonishment, you know, that you're about to play on this massive, famous worldwide pitch, or again, is it kind of like you can put it to the back of your mind?
Because the gaffer's been there before with his previous clubs. He took us the day before, I think a couple of days before in the week. So he told us to soak it all in now, because on the actual day, like, there's going to be no pictures, you know. It's just strictly go time, you know. So we went, I think it might have been on the Wednesday or the Tuesday, went to Wembley, and you could take pictures and see where we wanted to sit, you know, and having to come around. So on the Saturday, we literally got there and we literally knew we'd seen that a couple of days before. So we just literally went to our seats and got ready for the game.
And then I guess the game kicked off, and the first half was like a dream. And I guess for yourself, you know, scoring that goal, I mean, what do you remember about that goal going in?
I can remember, it's come out to me instinctively. I've chested it, but as the player's coming out, I've tried to chest it away from him, and luckily my touch was good, so it stayed on the full volley, and I've connected with it sweetly. And like they say, if you keep your head over the ball, you know, it's not gonna rise too high, and that's what I did, and it just flew into the roof of the net. And after that, my mind just went blank, and anything I remember was just. I could just remember getting yellow cards from the ref.
That was it, yeah, because you scored and then top straight off and swinging it around.
And they were all trying to cover you to protect you from the ref's line of vision, but that actually didn't happen because the ref saw you,
yeah,
didn't they?
Yeah, but that was the only way I think I could have celebrated to show how much. And I was pretty shocked at the beginning. I was like, have I just scored? And then when I heard everyone celebrating, then I just started to run.
Yeah.
And I just, no words can probably explain that feeling. Like, even when I see the playoff final years, like when it comes on Sky sometimes, it doesn't even feel like that was me.
Yeah, I can imagine. It must feel like a complete kind of whirlwind when you look back at it and you go, yeah, was that actually me? But yeah, your first touch set up perfectly, and as soon as you hit it, you just knew that was going to hit the net. And then obviously we went 2-up, and then, like you said, it wasn't meant to be. They scored a wonder goal that Revel probably won't get near scoring again in his life, and then what a cruel way to lose on penalties.
Yeah, you know, there's always, at the end of the day, there's always got to be one loser, you know. Unfortunately, we was, and I just think if that same player final happened again, you know, there'd be a different ending.
Absolutely.
It's just a cruel game we're in.
Would you say that's your biggest regret for your time at Orient?
My biggest regret probably is not taking a penalty, I think. Okay. Looking back at it now.
Was that decided before the match? Did Russ have his five players, or was it kind of decided at the end of the extra time who wanted to take one?
Yeah, because we didn't really train to say, oh, if it goes to penalty, we just kind of wanted to win it in normal time. And we had that confidence about us to say, you know what, as a team, we're going to beat these in normal time. But the penalties were decided after extra time, like literally, if you want to take a penalty, put your hand up. And I wanted to, but obviously at the time I was really nervous. But looking back at it now, I think I should have stepped up, you know, to take a penalty before our defender. Not saying that I could have missed, and, you know, it could have been the same situation, but
yeah.
I just think as a midfielder, I should be taking a penalty before our centre back.
That's fair. Yeah, no, that's fair, absolutely point. Fine. Yeah, no, I mean, it's one of those things you expect anyone taking a penalty from sort of 12 yards out to really be at least getting it on target and really, I mean, either making the keeper work at the very, very most, but going for the corners and putting them away, but it's easier said than done when you're under that much pressure.
I mean, the pressure must be unreal. It's something that stuck with me after the game. I just remember there's a picture of you just punching the floor, like punching the frustration. Turf. And you know, as fans, it was devastating. But as a player, I can't even begin to kind of comprehend how devastating that could be, like to lose the way we did.
Yeah, I just think when you're just touching distance away.
Yeah.
It just hurts. It hurts that much more, you know, like no disrespect to Peterborough, but they'd be kicking themselves that they didn't get to Wembley, but I'm sure they wouldn't have felt as much as, you know, as we felt watching Rotherham walk up them steps to celebrate going into the championship, you know.
Yeah, I remember actually I stayed in my seat for a little bit after the final whistle, but I just remember hearing the Rotherham guys going up, their fans were cheering as they were going upstairs. I was like, I don't want to see him lift the cup.
No, I can't.
Because Alex Revel will never score a better goal in his life, bless him. He's a great player, technically very good, but Alex Revel will never score a better goal in his life. And as for the first goal with Jamie Jones's mistake, it shouldn't have happened. And the first goal gave them the momentum that they needed. And Revs thought, sod it, I see Jones off his line, I'll go for it. Yeah. Worst case, he saves it or it goes over. Best case, I score and it's game on.
Yeah,
and they take their chances, and that's kind of what happened. So, after that, then obviously we stayed in League One. Rotherham went up. Did you make your mind up then that you would like to move on from Orient?
I just think sometimes I didn't make my mind up then, but when I was on my holiday, I just thought, you know. Sometimes in football, when the iron's hot, you have to strike, you know. And
yeah.
I just thought this could be my time to actually move on from the club. You know, I've tried to help them as much as I can, and I seeked advice from some of the players as well. You know, at the club, and they gave me good advice. Obviously, at the time, and my agent came back to me with Brentford, and I felt at the time that was the right decision for me. You know, knowing that they knew me from playing against them in the league. Helped a lot, and it showed me that I would, you know, be involved and not going somewhere just to be a squad player. Yeah.
That's the most important thing, because you see a lot of these players, Dele Alli with the exception at Spurs at the moment, but you see a lot of players like Connor Wickhams and people like that go up to bigger clubs
and
go out in the development sides and actually fade away and don't turn out to be anything, but quite the opposite for you.
Yeah, I think it's just deciding to go somewhere, you know. A big factor is if their manager's been in the same division with you, with any team, you know, or if someone in that club really, really likes you, you know, because a lot of players, like you said, go places and just drift in and out, which is tough. And to go from playing from two consecutive seasons in a row to not playing at all would break a lot of players, and that would probably break me if I was to do that. Yeah. So it was a big decision for me.
And obviously one of the other big factors as well was, as obviously the manager, Mark Warburton strikes me as a very similar character to Russell Slade in how he likes to build his teams. He goes for the character and ability rather than just upsetting the apple cart and the balance of the team. Is that fair?
Yeah, that's probably fair. I'd say that, you know. I think Mark Warburton had a philosophy and a style of football that he wanted to play, you know. And he believed in it a lot, and that started to breed through to the players, you know, just after, I'm trying to think, maybe just after we went on a losing spell at Brentford. And after that, we surged into the playoffs. Yeah. And through that period, we realised, you know, that the manager actually believes in us and he wants us to play a certain way. And even if we do concede goals by trying to play out, he would not shout at us, which was surprising. But that confidence come later on in the season, you know, and Brentford pushed on into the playoffs, as it shows.
Yeah. Not bad for an ex-City stockbroker, is it?
Just
goes to show you all walks of life. So did you get a chance to say goodbye to the Orient players? Did you have any sort of parting words? And sort of what did you say, if so?
I think some of them knew that obviously I may not be coming back, obviously, just because of interests and as they rise. But a lot of the players I spoke to privately on your phone, or I text them just to say, you know, thank you for an unbelievable time at a great club, you know. And and they're grateful to even have played with me. So I spoke to a majority of them anyway that was there at the period I was there for as well, which was good, obviously, to say goodbye as well. And thank you.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I remember the players on Twitter who do tweet all kind of giving you farewell messages and telling you you'd go on to smash it, which you did, which was great. So, looking back at your time at Orient, have you got any regrets about your time at Orient?
Other than the penalty decision, I'd probably say everything that I've dreamed about when I was there came true in the end, you know. So, it was a great platform for me, you know. And they helped me a lot, and they helped me to who I am today. So.
Really, how football should work, really. You sign a lad into the youth team, he does well, he's good enough, he gets into the first team, he ends up with a trip to Wembley in a playoff final in a professional league,
and he gets
a move to you know, a club in a higher league. It's really how the system ought to work. You're kind of like that shining example of really how it should be. So that's cool. So who do you have, sort of your best mate at Orient? Who would you say that was?
I'd probably say when I was there that year when we went on to do well, I think all of the lads in that squad at that time, I could probably go out, share the room with them and whatever. And we all got on that well, that we was all very, very tight. So it'd probably be very tough for me to say who my best mate was. I roomed with El at the time, Elliot, on the Zuzi. We were very close. But like I said, the whole group in general, like, we always used to go out for meals when we could with our girlfriends and wives. So I'd probably say El, but majority of the lads, regardless, anyway.
Fair enough. Do you still keep in contact with them? Do you still have, like, text banter and stuff like that?
Now and then I speak to some of them, but... As life just goes on, it's hard for everyone to just keep in contact. You know, if you don't see someone on a daily basis, which is very hard. But when I do keep in contact, when I do speak to them, you know, it just feels like old times. You know, which is always good.
Cool. So obviously we know how the move to Brentford came about, but how did the whole move came about? Because you had a good season with Brentford, you was there for that season. How did the whole City move come about, Moses?
That was a surprise to me, to be honest with you. I was enjoying my birthday actually at the time, and my agent rang and they just said, Hull City want to sign you, you know, and it's going to be a situation, you know, of what you want to do. And funny enough, as I got off the phone with my agent, Brentford rang me to say, Hull City have triggered your clause. You can obviously be giving you permission to go and agree personal terms. So it was a situation of what do I do, you know? And at the time, I just thought to myself, they've just come down from the Premier League. Obviously, they're going to want to get back up to the Premier League. And I looked to the team on paper, you know, and I just thought that working day in and day out with working day in and day out with internationals is going to make me progress. And working under the likes of a big manager like Steve Bruce and his assistant Nick Thielen, he's been in the game for years, would benefit me a lot, you know. And seeing at the time Brentford had no
manager, did they?
Manager, you know, because Wolverton had resigned. It was everything was still up in shambles, you know. And when we actually got a manager, you know, I was in with Brentford for a couple of days, and I just said to myself, you know, like I feel like my head's not here anymore, you know, and it's best for me not to be here rather than being there. My head's not there thinking that I should be somewhere else, you know. And the manager respected my decision and he said, you know what, if your head's not here, there's no point playing for us. So he gave me all the best, you know, he wished me all the luck and let me go on.
Fair play. Interesting. So how different is it working under Slade, say, to Warburton, to Steve Bruce? Obviously all English managers all had varying degrees of success and careers in the football football game. What? How different is it? How different are they all? Is it? Or is that quite a too broad a question?
I think Russell Slade and Mark Wharton were similar when it comes to like the way they wanted us to play. You know, I think Mark Wharton over exaggerated things, you know, which kind of helped us in the division we was in, as the Championship is a footballing division, you know, and good football goes a long way in this division. But I think right now the mentality that Steve Bruce has, you know, is we need to be direct on the team, you know, and a lot of passes side to side is just going to bring pressure onto us, and he's probably more direct at the other two managers, and it's probably not the prettiest of football to watch. But it gets the results, you know, showing where we are in the league right now. And but I think last year, obviously, that was probably more. It was enjoyable. It was, I wouldn't say more enjoyable, but it was very good to play in a footballing team, you know, where you get the ball down, you know, and you're carving your opposition apart with multiple passes, you know, and scoring good team goals. But it's a learning curve to me at the end of the day, you know. And I can only get better if I keep improving.
So I guess expectation at Hull this season is, like you said, you started off pretty well. I guess automatic promotion or at least playoffs as a minimum, I guess, is the expectation for Hull this season.
Yeah, I think of course the owner wants to see his club back in the top flight, which is the Premiership, and all the players do as well. You know, there's a lot of big names that we have in the dressing room, and it'd be a great achievement if, as a club, we can get promoted this year, and that's what we're working towards.
Absolutely, and we wish you best luck with that. So just, that's our questions out of the way. So we've got a few from listeners, so we're aware that this was kind of overrun a little bit, so we'll be very quick. So questions from Orient fans. So do you want to start?
Cool. So at MossyLJ on Twitter said, ignoring the result, will you ever be able to top that goal that you scored at Wembley? Only if it's the goal that takes Hull back up into the Premier League, maybe.
I hope one day I could put that to make it my team that I'd be at go into the Premiership or win some sort of big tournament. So hopefully one day I want to be able to, but for now, nothing will beat that goal.
Absolutely. And at Stan23 Martin says, that goal at Wembley so far, is that the best moment of your career, would you say, so far?
That's probably been the best
moment of my career, yeah. At SteveCab121 said, what was you thinking when you took your shirt off after scoring at Wembley? What was going through your mind?
Probably just adrenaline, you know, like I've actually scored on this day at Wembley, and you know, it's just destined to be, and hopefully let's go on the win. That was my feeling, you know. I'm shocked.
And the word yes with the most amount of E's and S's that you've ever come across in your life, probably, as well, right?
Oh, it was just... Yeah, man, you couldn't even count how many E's are in that. But it was a weird feeling.
I can imagine.
It just felt fake.
At Ian Mene John says, if the opportunity came about, would you ever return to Orient? So maybe one day later on in your career?
Yeah, I probably would, you know, because that's where obviously it all started for me, you know, and I feel like that's the other place of my heart as home.
Yep.
Have you been keeping an eye on Orient at all since you left?
Oh yeah, they always just flick through to see how they're getting on, you know, and I want to see them back where they should be, which is in league higher than league two, you know, so
yeah.
I hope they get promoted.
So we had a question that came in from at OrientFanTV that said, how far do you think Orient can go under Ian Hendon's leadership, and do you think we'll get promoted this season? I don't know how much you'll be able to answer that, but I thought we'd ask you.
I'd probably say with the players they have now, you know, it seems like things are on the up from obviously what last year was, you know. Seeing some of the highlights sometimes, I just feel like that they should be in the league above, you know, and right now they're in the playoff positions.
Yeah.
So it's still pretty early, you know, but if you're in and around it now and you can stay in and around it, who knows when it comes to the last couple of months, but fingers crossed for the boys down there, they get promoted.
Yep, at LOFC Chad says, who helped you progress the most in your time at Orient?
I'd probably say like most of the lads helped me in different ways, you know, like when they could. I'd say Dean Cox probably helped me a lot. Kevin Lisby done numerous amounts of things for me. And I'd probably make Nathan Clark, the skipper at the time. And just most of the lads in general, but obviously them two mainly.
Yeah, I suppose it's helpful when they're playing in the same position as you as well. At Boatsy asks, do you miss playing for us and living around London?
The seasons that I was there, you know, they were memorable seasons. And some days I do wake up missing, you know, going through the Blackwell Tunnel, you know, and playing at the Maxim, which should always be a memory to have. So yeah, sometimes I wake up missing that side of it.
Yep, at Matt Bristow says, do you think you would be the same player without the influence of Slade as a manager and your mentor Kevin Lisby?
Probably not. You know, it's hard to tell because obviously I've had them two. I was lucky to have them two in my career at some stage. So I'm probably not if I didn't.
So we had some messages off Facebook as well, and Elliot Byrne got in touch with us and he said, you're a top player and hopefully you can go all the way. Did you have any reservations about the possible fans' reaction to you joining a rival side like Brentford? Does that enter your perspective at all, or is it something sort of far in the distance?
Yeah, at the time when I was going to go, obviously I thought, you know, I don't know if I can go to this team because the fans obviously not going to like what they're going to hear or the news that they're going to see. But at the end of the day, I think it's just I need to do what's best for my career, you know. And it's not the longest career, so I need to make the right moves. I feel at the right time, and I felt that was the right move at the right time for me, you know. And it's helped me a lot.
Yeah, absolutely. Elliot Byrne also went on to say, I think Mo can play for England one day. Is this something that you share, or are you looking at other nations maybe to play for? Or you? I know you've played for the under 20s. England going to be your national team?
That's probably one of my dreams as well, you know, to get called up to the national squad, because the season before, I always wanted to represent any sort of country, because that's just an honour in itself, you know, and that came through representing the 20s in two friendlies and then a tournament, you know, so hopefully it's either Nigeria or England, whoever comes first, you know, so if I keep working hard, you know, that shouldn't be far off.
Yeah, absolutely. So Roger Albury got in touch with us as well, and he said, being a fast and pacey winger with great footwork, how do you find playing as a fullback in defence, and what's your favoured position?
I'd probably say playing in defence is obviously a bit more different now, because you've got to be more switched on to when they're attacking on the other side, you know, and a lot more thinking is required, and a lot more fitness is required, I'd probably say. But Over the seasons now, I've started to enjoy playing a bit deeper, you know, which I didn't think this day would come where I'd be saying, I enjoy playing deeper. But it's just great to be chosen, you know, in the starting lineup, you know, and if I'm chosen to play right, I'll play there, and if I'm chosen to play right wing, I'll play there happily. So I don't really prefer either or, as long as I'm in the starting lineup.
Yeah, I guess that's how you evolve as a player as well, isn't it? By playing different positions, and as your career progresses, you get more experience, more used to playing in different positions. Val Jacobs said, "I love you, Moses." Is there much difference between League One and Championship football, in your opinion?
I'd probably say there is a difference. I'd probably say it's quicker, and there's obviously better players in the Championship, because obviously some of them have just come down from the Premiership. And they have premiership qualities, and it's technically better than League One.
Of course, yeah. Graham Levy got in touch with us on Facebook. He asked, "Is there anyone that you hate playing against?"
From last year, I'd probably say Lee Tomlin, who's gone to Bournemouth now.
Yeah, he's
because he was a very tricky customer, and I struggled to deal with his technical ability. So I'd probably say him.
Okay. And he also said, even though you're still young, has the thought of coaching or managing in the future crossed your mind?
Oh, no, that's not crossed my mind yet. I've still got a couple of years.
Too young. Hopefully more than a couple. David Boone got in touch with us and he said, has there been any better moment so far in your career than that mega match in the playoff semi-final? Right, so we've already covered that, so yep. There's no need to do that. And Chris Colley said, one of many great O's players over the years, just a big thank you, Moses, and good luck. And Christian Darby
last
said,
question.
Yeah, will Orient always be your number one club? And I'm so proud of you, by the way, he says.
I think it probably would be, you know, that's where I started off, and that's who gave me the chance, you know, and the fans gave me that chance to actually play and do well, you know, and I saw that I owe it to that club.
Absolutely.
Wicked.
That's
all we got.
Yeah, so thank you for your time, Mo. Thanks for joining us. I know it's late on a Sunday and you're probably knackered from playing at the weekend, but it's been a great interview. Thanks so much for joining us.
No worries.